I'm Flynn.
I am the Music Man.
And I'm Nick Holloway.
And that means this is an episode of Please Watch Him!
Good agenda, Jared.
Oh, I agendaed that like an agenda, motherfucker.
Yeah, because hello, lethal listeners.
Hello, everybody.
Hello there.
Hello.
Hey, you're here for that really good relaunch that we're supposed to be doing with Ben Thomas from the Do You Inverts. Oh, wait, no.
No.
He's having barn-related issues.
Barnageddon, as I believe he referred to it.
Yes. Yes, he has a barn.
He's a born-again Christian.
But so I think we have relaunched it. This is a relaunch. Screw him.
Still kind of relaunch. We're still doing new
last week.
New stuff, aren't we? New stuff.
Yeah. But he had this full major super duper agenda type thing, said he couldn't do it. And I stepped up, man. I stepped up.
You stepped up, Jared. I mean, it was literally, I'm going to check the post on the group where we planned it. It was literally like a minute after we said, go for it, Jared. Bang, agenda.
I will do it. I did it.
Yeah.
I agendaed.
You did a good agenda.
You have an agenda. This is my show, foo.
So yeah, we did my agenda. And that's your agenda.
Yeah. And next week, time it'll probably be Martin's.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Ben will promise this huge agenda and all his planning and he'll promise the world and he'll tell us to bring our A game and at the last minute he'll turn it down and say we're not going to do it.
It's having a plying related issue or something.
Yeah, whatever. Castrating more pigs or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cementing sheep.
Yeah. But anyway.
So, yeah. So this is my agenda. Right. It's like some sort of bolt out of the blue came to me. Basically, we'll just go through. We'll not even just tell what the agenda is. We'll just start, will we?
We're on part one already, aren't we?
We'll just start. This is part one. This is general chit-chat.
It's good chitty-chat so far.
We've introed, and now we're general chitty-chatting. Right, okay. So move on to part two.
Wow. We're going to be rattling through this agenda, aren't we?
Part two. Just to start off the show, I think we did this last time as well, didn't we? We just had a wee general chitty chat about, you know, a film we watched this week or recently.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, Phil, have you watched?
The most recent film would have been on Sunday on Channel 5, Ghostbusters 2.
Oh, Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah. Which, you know... It's not a bad sequel. It's all right. You know, it's got Ghostbusters in it and stuff. It's got the painting and things. But
the
I realised...
It's Ghostbusters peace when she saw the symbol. real. This is only like 2 years ago.
But I realised what was wrong with it. And it's going to feed into a topic of conversation later as well. So I'm pre...
Ghostbusters 1.
Pre-agendering. No, it's the music.
Oh.
Doesn't have.
Hasn't got the Emma Bernstein score.
That's true. It's more rap based, isn't it? Music.
Yeah, and a lot of it feels kind of more synthesizer-y based.
That's what Dan Aykroyd was into. 5 years later, he was really into that kind of music. So,
was it like 84 and then like 85 or 89?
89, yeah. But like whenever Bill Murray and Sigourney Weaver on screen, like their kind of characters theme together, that kind of love theme, is just atrocious. And it just that really drags the film down. I don't know why, but not hearing the kind of that piano music you get from the that's it completely.
Roughly.
Have you heard about the Ghostbusters news about the third one?
Bill Murray ain't doing it. We're doing it anyway.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, so I was reading a quote, and it was somebody was just saying, thereby Ghostbusters 3 enters the realms of Blues Brothers 2000 territory.
Ooh. Yeah, well, he's also pretty much said that it's definitely going to be a passing of the torch.
Oh yeah, it is. It's the hip young Ghostbusters.
Yeah.
Yeah, which means it's going to be Jonah Hill.
Oof.
You just know it, and two other
fuckwits. Bill Hader. No, they put Bill Hader as Ghostbuster in it.
It'll be Jonah Hill.
Oh, it could be that guy, Scott Pilgrim, Michael Cena.
Oh, yeah. Or it could be...
John Cena.
That'd be amazing. If he was John Cena's brother. That'd be superb.
That's a movie we all go watch.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, well, Ghostbusters 2, it's... Do you know what? Just, it ain't terrible. It gets a bad rap, but, you know, it ain't good either, so...
No, I think, you know, the villain's not great, and the music lets the film down.
That film scared me for many years.
What, Viggo did? Picture.
Yeah.
Really?
Really did. That whole...
I had picture taken with Viggo.
Fuck yeah. You know that bit right at the start... Well, not at the start of the film, but partway through, and his head just stretches out?
Thing, yeah.
Yeah.
That did. That really fucked with me when I was 5.
Freaky Ghostbusters. But I remember in the build-up, I remember being at like junior school and the build-up to that, and everybody was sure that they were going to wear like the same colour outfits from the Ghostbusters cartoon.
Dude, I remember about Ghostbusters 2, actually, when it came out, I had a Ghostbusters 2... You know those like little... You know those little like hardback books...
Yeah, the Ladybird one.
Yeah, they were kind of like that. And then there was one for Ghostbusters 2. And in it, there was a picture where, you know, the bit where Janosch gets zapped by the lightning?
Yeah.
He's holding the brush up. They had a snapshot of that. And what I thought was awesome is you could actually see on the snapshot his bones through, like when the light was hitting his finger. I just kind of thought, that's kind of awesome. It's still kind of awesome that they would put that much detail into that one little bit.
So obviously, that's what, 89, so it wouldn't have been proper digital effects, would it? That would still be like the rotoscoping kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, you can see clearly on the picture, like where he's like, where it hits us, like it's just as it hits his finger, and you can see his bone like, in his finger.
Yeah, so what did you watch then, Jared?
What did I watch? Ooh, what did I watch? Well, we kind of.
Yeah, what did you watch? This is the whole point of this section.
Well, I actually watched two things. For some obscure reason, just because I have to see something out when I've started watching like a series of films, I watched the most recent Underworld film.
That'll learn you.
Yeah, that ain't a good movie, man. That ain't a good movie. You know, it gets a pass for the obvious reason that it has Kate Beckinsale running about in
You dirty boy.
That's the only reason those films get a pass. The first two have Kate Beckinsale. The last most recent one has Kate Beckinsale. And the one in the middle has your girl, Rona Mitra. That's the only reason they get a pass. That's it. They're by, well, Len Wiseman, he did the first, I don't know who did the third one. Patrick Topatopatopatopatos or something. Some sort
that's
of makeup.
That's quite the name.
Patrick Topatopoulos, I think it was. But anyway, Len Wiseman, man, because we were talking earlier just about, before we started, about the new Total Recall film, about it's getting panned. And man, that Len Wiseman, man, you know, like Die Hard 4 is probably his best film.
Well, that's not a good film though, is it?
It's a film that...
Oh, it's not too bad.
It's all right, but it isn't a Die Hard movie. That's the problem. It's an action film. Let's not get into that, man. But the guy, he's up there with Ratner and... Although he's probably, to be honest with you, I've never heard him speak, so I don't know whether he's as much of a douchebag as Brett Ratner, but, you know.
This is your chance, Jared, to make a voice for him.
My name is Len Wiseman.
No, that's still your man.
That's the Ridley Scott.
Well, hello there, partners. My name is Len Wiseman, and I like to make movies. I'm not a douche.
Len Wiseman, cowboy hat, search.
Done. I don't know, the guy, he got Kit Beckinsale, he must be all right doing something, but, you know, he's up there with, well, do you know what I'll say, he's up there with Bay, and just that kind of
rubbish vapid,
shiny, but little or nothing to them movie guy.
I bet he's pitching a film starring Kirsten Stewart then.
Probably.
Every other director in Hollywood is doing right now.
I watched that. And that's all we shall speak of it. and then I sort of secondarily watched.
Secondarily?
Watching it, yeah. Because I was on the computer playing Rage. But she was watching The Women. Do you know what that is? It's like got.
Sounds familiar.
Ian and. Other women in it, Will Smith's wife, and it is. She watched it, and she watched it over 3 days, and then she just was like, "That's rubbish." And I was like, "I could have told you that after the first 10 seconds. It's just complete and utter nonsense. I can't even really describe it because
is it like an attempt to, you know, Sex and the City kind of thing?
Kind of. It's all about Meg Ryan and her husband cheats on him, but with Eva Mendes. It's like, well, of course he would.
Yeah, looking at Meg Ryan on the poster, she's not looking good these days, is she?
She's kind of all been remolded, and she ain't good.
You should have just watched the First Wives Club.
I don't know. It's kind of just this nonsense, really cheap, you know, appeal to women crap sort of stuff.
Is this lethal watching or is this Loose Women?
No.
That was a shot right there.
Don't watch it. If your wife's going to watch it, don't watch it. Don't watch it.
This, that or Leap Year.
Anyway, Martin.
Jesus. What have I watched?
Bring us back, Martin. Bring us back.
This film is actually rather decent. I've watched that I Am Number 4 film.
Oh, really?
Which is, it's kind of a science fiction. It's based on a novel series. I think they're still writing them right now. And it's not bad. It's teen drama-y, but it's also got a bit of sci-fi in, so maybe if you're older, you might not get it all completely, but you know, I can appreciate that it's aimed at the teen generation kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you know what? Towards the end, it gets pretty darn good. It's got Tim Oliphant in it.
He's the bad guy, isn't he?
He's not a bad guy, no. He's one of the kind of protectors.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
But unfortunately, this movie, although it went okay at the cinema, and because of that, they've kind of ditched all, they've actually shelved all attempts at the sequel now.
Yeah.
Which is a bit of a shame because it kind of like leaves off, and a lot of the critics of the film say that this film leaves a lot of unanswered questions, and that's because they're not thinking of it as, they think of it as a standalone film.
They want it
to
franchise, don't they?
Episodic. Exactly. It's like this last series of Doctor Who, people wanted every single secret of the series from the first episode. You're not going to get that because it's episodic.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to let the secrets reveal themselves kind of thing. So I think that was rather harsh criticism in that film, really. But something that I do feel bad for about this film, the star is Alex Pettifer. And of course, this is the second time round that he's been in a film based on a novel series. And he hasn't, the film's actually been okay, but it just hasn't took off because obviously he was also in Stormbreaker as well, and that was just a good film, really. So both these quality films just haven't really took off.
Phone for him. Well, both of them, I think both of them kind of get tarred with the Harry Potter brush in that they kind of feel like films that studios are trying to make a franchise out of something. You know, they're making films like there was Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thieves.
Yeah, are making a sequel of Percy Jackson. So
yeah. But obviously, The Hunger Games was another one of those. But that got an audience, and that was a big success for the carrying on making the rest of those films.
Sure, they're talking about making another Twilight movie after this one, even though there is no book.
Just making another one.
That's how bad it's getting. You know, they're actually just going to just keep the gravy train running. And I have no doubt that, I don't know, your woman Stephanie Meyer probably just got handed a lot of money, and she's probably said, go on then.
Whatever you say.
Yeah, I don't know why. J.K. Rowling maybe already had enough money and was just kind of like, nah.
Well, I think she was more kind of, I think she's more protective about the characters and everything, isn't she?
It
seems to be more personal to her, but she's like, you know, no, the novel series is going to be this, and, you know, nothing else will be done unless it's under my say-so. Which, you know, you've got to respect, whereas Twilight
I kind of respect that. But if they make more Twilight movies without any books. Well, you know your woman has to give it the go-ahead.
Yeah, but she'll just go, yeah.
Just the most awful movies ever. Oh, my God.
I think the Twilight movies are personally ruining cinema because apparently, you know, The Hunger Games, I went and saw it and I thought it was fairly okay. But my sister, who saw it, she read the books first and she came out of it thinking it was such a shit. The books are nothing like the film at all. It's too much influenced by Twilight. And I think a lot of films these days are being way too much influenced by Twilight. You know,
but that's what they do. They look at what makes money and then they go for it.
They were saying that about the new Spider-Man film as well, weren't they?
That's what I was just about to say.
Peter Parker being kind of Twilight-erized. They can't have anything nice now, can we, thanks to Twilight?
No.
It's like Scrooge McDuck's no longer the richest fictional character. It's the people from Twilight.
So, part two done. Moving on to part three.
Statham talks about
romantic comedies. Hello, me old chicken sticks. Welcome to the second episode of Jason Statham Talks About. Did you like the first episode? I know you did, or else I'll headbutt you with me bottom. So, what can I be talking about this week, Stan the Crows? Well, I'm going to talk about my favourite movie genre, romantic comedies. I love them. Laughter and love are two things I don't really see much of in my action-packed life, but watching these movies allows me to live the lives of others and see what I'm missing. Much like that movie Strange Days. Number 10. Leap Year. Oh, I love this. It's so realistic. I went to Ireland once and it was just like this movie. It was full of drunken Irish people in bars who drive crappy beat-up cars and they have to drive about 3 hours to do their shopping. Oh, to be sure. Paris Buns. Number 9. Fool's Gold. This movie stars Matthew McConaughey and some lady. They look for gold and they have amazing adventures together. With Donald Sutherland. Oh, they're so foolish. Like your face. Oats and chaff. Number 8. P.S. I Love You. This movie stars Gerard Butler and some lady. He's a dreamy Scottish man who sounds authentically Irish. Seriously, it's one of the best Irish accents I've ever heard. It's almost as good as Sean Connery in Darby O'Gill and the Little People. I went to Ireland once and it was just like that movie. Loaf of bread. Number 7. Failure to Launch. This movie stars Matthew McConaughey and some lady. The best bit about this movie is the bit where there's a misunderstanding that gets sorted by the end and they all fall in love. Ha, amazingly original. Diggy Bird. Number 6. The Ugly Truth. This movie stars Gerard Butler and some lady. Yeah, it's so romantic. Butcher's Hook. Number 5. Ghosts of Girlfriends Past. This movie stars Matthew McConaughey and some lady. Have you ever seen the classic movie A Christmas Carol? No? Well, good. Watch this instead. It's pretty much the same thing, but it's better because it's funny. That other movie is so boring. No one falls in love at all. Except a tank. Number 4. The Bounty Hunter. This movie stars Gerard Butler and some lady. He's a bounty hunter. Oh, in fact, I don't want to spoil it for you. You should just watch it because it's got lots of action. In fact, I should have done it. I'm the ultimate action man. Trouble and Strife. Number 3. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. This movie stars Matthew McConaughey and some lady. I could lose a guy in 10 seconds or less. I'd drop kick him off the world like a boss. Number 2. The Wedding Planner. This movie stars Matthew McConaughey and some lady. The lady in this movie, her ass is huge. I could bounce my teeth off it. That's all I can remember about it. Number 1. Rain of Fire. This movie stars Matthew McConaughey and Gerard Butler. There may be other people in it, but I can't really remember. And I think there was something about a dragon. They may have fallen in love with it. I can't be sure. Lovely. Right, folks. I'm off to the Gary Glitter to clean out my pipes. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. But remember, if you didn't, I know where you live.
Jason Statham Talks About.
Well, that was part three.
Well, thank you, Jason. I can't believe Jason Statham can speak French.
Ah.
It's astounding. And that he could rap in French as well. I just can't believe it.
It's awesome, isn't it?
It's amazing. Well done, Jason.
Yeah. So
he's a man of many talents.
I have genuinely not listened to that, by the way. I know you put it in the Dropbox, but I've genuinely not listened to that.
I noticed this. You should listen to it. You should listen to it now.
Well, no, because we're in part four. That's not...
Yeah, we're on part four now. We've just listened to it.
Yeah. Yeah, I did just listen to it. It was amazing.
Part four!
Part four.
Part four is the topic. This is the topic, man.
Oh, really? Can I have a Mars bar instead?
Anyway, so part four. So that was brilliant. What I thought might be interesting is to maybe talk a little bit about, well, movies. We talk about movies quite a bit.
Yeah.
We occasionally mention...
Well spotted, Jared.
Okay, we occasionally mention, you know, things about the movie, like whether the movie's good and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And very occasionally we might say, oh, and I like the music. Well, I thought, let's explore that a little bit more.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let us think about the best movie soundtracks. And then we can each talk about one that we think is excellent.
Just one?
Well, what do you want to do? Do you want to talk generally, or do you want to talk about individual ones first?
I think we should do one, and then we can do about notable mentions later on.
I'll start off. I'll start off.
Oh, really?
Yes, I'll start off.
Will you?
Yeah, I will. The movie soundtrack to me is quite possibly the best movie soundtrack of the last arbitrary number of years. Tron Legacy. Mm.
That is a good soundtrack.
That's an epic soundtrack. Because I bought the soundtrack before I saw the film. Because it came out, I think, maybe just about a week or so. I can't remember. But basically, it was kind of like, holy crapola. Daft Punk have done a movie soundtrack. And then I heard a song on the radio. They played, I can't remember which the name of it, but they played one of the songs on the radio.
D-Rest, I think.
No, it was before D-Rest. I heard... it's one near the end of the album. I can't remember the name of it, but it was it's the one that kind of has the sort of the Tron Legacy overture in it, but it's really kind of like electronic and stuff. But that was the one I heard first, and I couldn't get that overture out of my head. I just couldn't leave my head. And then I heard D-Rez, and I liked D-Rez, but I still couldn't get that wee overture out of my head. And I was like, man, I've got to get this album. So bought it, and it just...
But you actually paid cash for it.
Oh, I paid cash for it.
You didn't acquire it. You spent actual money on it.
You know, I bought it. The way it starts, it just from the minute it starts on, it just is like, whoa. It starts off and it just builds and it builds and it builds, and just that wee overture. I think to me that will go down, for me anyway, as big as Star Wars, Superman, Indiana Jones.
That's a bold claim, right there.
It does to me. It's up there with that. Just that sort of tune that they've come up with. To me, it just is up there with those music.
I found that really interesting, because what was the Tron soundtrack like?
The Tron soundtrack is
pants.
I think it's just quite nondescript.
Exactly. You can't really recall any kind of... It's the visuals of Tron that carried it more than the audio, isn't it?
It's really nondescript. And a big deal was made about Daft Punk doing the music, because it was kind of like, holy crap, Daft Punk are doing a music soundtrack. And I think everybody had high expectations of it, because I think generally Daft Punk, pump out pretty good stuff. But I think they excelled themselves. I definitely think for me, out of all their stuff, possibly their best album. I love pretty much every single song on it.
Yeah, my son absolutely loves that soundtrack. He really fell for the film.
Every single song. And I had heard, so I had listened to the whole soundtrack a couple of times before I went to see the film. So when I was watching the film, I was actually all kind of like, singing along, and I go, like really getting more, really getting excited and all, because the music was just so good, and I'd already listened to it so much. And I think it's, I can't think of a weak song.
You're probably right there.
I cannot think of a weak bit of music in it.
It's also an interesting soundtrack, because most movie soundtracks are orchestral, but obviously being Daft Punk, it's quite hip and
it's quite electronic.
It's very different to normal movie soundtracks.
I think they got a really good grasp of the orchestral stuff when it comes in. Mm. I really like the mix of that kind of orchestral
electro.
And what I love is that little overture just appears just in little bits throughout. So I love like the start overture, and then the grid, and then I can't remember the name of the one later on, but it pops up.
My son could tell you. He can listen to any song. Just name the track.
I love End of Line 2. End of Line's a great one. And then, of course, I think I sent it to you guys, which I didn't file, admit that, the Legacy remix album.
Yeah, the reconfigured or whatever it's called.
Reconfigured, which is actually also very good. But I think the reason it's very good is because it comes from such good stuff originally.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's hard to kind of mess up what they did in the first album. So yeah. For me, it's just, I think it's just great. And I think it really fits the film. I think it possibly helps to make the film maybe a bit better than it is. And I don't hate Tron Legacy. I really enjoyed it. The main guy is as dull as dishwater. That's fine. He has very little charisma and he's just pretty bland. But I think it's a good film. I like it. I'm hoping they do a sequel. I know they're still, I don't know, I think they may have said they
are. Isn't the cartoon series out soon?
I think it's out in America.
The one with Elijah Wood doing the voices and stuff.
I think you can get some episodes on from America, but
we wouldn't know about that.
You can somewhere, but I think it's just a really epic soundtrack. I can't think of a weak song on the whole album. And I think when I watch the film, I think the film is so much better for it.
I agree with that.
Well, that's the thing. The soundtracks are so vitally important, isn't it? It does help with the telling of the film, really. They do,
and I'm trying to think. Was there some film out very recently that had a very, very, very limited soundtrack? I can't remember. Trying to think of examples where there's minimal soundtrack, but it's still, you know, one film I can think of is The Road. I think The Road has a very, very minimal, very, very minimal soundtrack, and it only sort of comes on in very specific moments, like the scene where they're in the house.
Yeah.
And they're trying to get out, and it just builds this escalating sort of like pitchy, just like do-do-do-do-do-do sort of thing. And it really sort of gets the mood and gets you kind of like going, holy crap, oh my God.
So that would be like the scene for There Will Be Blood.
This kind of relentless,
it just builds.
Yeah, it's just this constant, and it just gets louder and louder, and it just seems very relentless. It's quite similar to that, actually.
I'll have to drop that in now, because that's the bit with the oil fire particularly.
Yeah, it's very similar to that kind of that bit of music, actually. I think at the moment and fairly recent, you know, as I say, purely from the point of view of consistency, Tron Legacy.
It's a good call. It is a good call.
Can you beat it, Martin?
I think I can, and it was actually the one I'm going to go with it's by an old... I mean, there's so many that you can choose, really. But I wanted to go with one of the big ones, really. And you can't say movie soundtracks without mentioning John Williams, quite frankly. And in my vision, out of all the many soundtracks he's done, his best is Superman the Movie.
Oh, no. Oh, Jared needs to set Jared off now.
I'm sorry. If you speak to someone and they say that they've got Superman the Movie soundtrack on CD or they've heard Superman the Movie soundtrack, it's like you connect with them in kind of like, you know, in like a yes, I understand.
Oh, yeah.
We connect each other. We are in the same thinking, you know, because it's just such an immense soundtrack.
There's so much quality.
It really is. So I mean, there's so many. It's not just the whole Superman theme, which is one of the best themes ever.
The fanfare to it, yeah.
But there's also many different other films, other themes, sorry.
Krypton theme.
You've got the love theme between Lois and Clark. You've also got the villains theme. The villains theme is just genius. But it's like even just like... It with many of the John Williams soundtracks, he does the music of the scenes, so you'll listen to this soundtrack and you will realize, you'll remember which scene this comes from, and you'll have that scene going through your head when you're actually hearing this song. And such as so when there's Superman's First Night Out, which I believe is actually one of the tracks from the actual CD, where he goes saving everyone in that one single night, and the music from that is just amazing, where it starts out from the helicopter and then his transformation into Superman. That's just such a beautiful thing. There are some. There is one. I'd say there's only one bad point.
Yeah.
About that soundtrack.
I know which one it is.
It's the "Have you? Can you read my mind?"
Yeah. Oh God, it's so hideous.
Can you read my mind? Do you know what it is that you do to me? I don't know who you are. Friend from another star. Here I am, like a kid out of school, holding hands with a god. I'm a fool.
It is, but the good thing is, if you actually get the 2 CD one, there is a version of the love theme which doesn't have the talking.
It doesn't have it on it.
But with Margaret Kidder's jazz poetry over the top.
Oh, that's just it's
crazy.
But you know what? Because it's sort of a bit relevant, because you know the way they've done the
the Man of Steel trailers there. And obviously the music from that is from Lord of the Rings, so it's not even it's not even an idea of what the soundtrack's going to be like. But it's Hans Zimmer, so, you know, he's big, big shoes to fill.
Yeah. But if anybody can do it, though, it's Hans Zimmer. Because...
Well, this is it. And, you know, the whole thing about... I remember when Superman Returns, I remember the first teaser trailer and hearing that theme from Krypton and going, oh my God! That, you know, just... It just was like, holy crap.
The whole opening credits in the cinema and you heard John Williams' theme
people
blasting
were cheering out. I went to a midnight show and everybody, as soon as it came on, was all like, yes!
And then Super Kid turned up and everybody went, oh.
Yeah.
Don't spoil it.
We're talking about the music, just. But no, as soon as that came on, everybody just kind of went, yes, in the screen. But, you know, I watched that teaser so much. And again, probably mainly as well because the music was so good. It was just like, it's great.
It is. It's such a good soundtrack. And that comes from the master as well. I mean, this is John Williams. He's done Superman, Star Wars, Home Alone, Hook, Harry Potter, Indiana Jones, Jaws, E.T., to name a few. I mean, I only learned earlier today that he actually did the TV tunes for Lost in Space and also Land of the Giants. And I didn't realise that before. The man is an utter genius.
Got everything. He is a genius, but do you think he gets a bit repetitive?
Well,
do you
know
come out as like a devil's advocate?
No, he's not repetitive, but he has, you know, you can almost tell a John Williams theme when you hear it.
I mean, Alan Silvestri's got has the same kind of foibles where he kind of falls back on similar instruments and techniques and stuff.
Well, I think it's more down to, I think they all use very individual orchestras, and they all highlight different different kind of instruments. John Williams is a lot of horns.
Yes, he is.
You know, he uses a lot of the horns.
Oh yeah, he does.
In his stuff, and I think that, you know, you sort of know a John Williams soundtrack because you hear those that sort of very familiar, you know, part of the orchestra. But yeah, you know, I remember when I was really young, you could be singing the Star Wars theme and it would slip into Superman and then maybe slip back. You know, they're very similar, but they're different. You know, that, you know, when you hear one, you know it's which one it is. But yeah, no, the guy knows how to pop out a tune.
Pop a tune out.
Oh yeah.
So beat that, Phil.
Well, see, my pick now is not as good because I kind of want, you know, because I mean, I know what the best soundtrack is now. I'll come to what the best soundtrack actually is at the end of this.
We can come back and talk about some other ones that
Your two, yeah, they're good, but they're not actually the best soundtrack of any of, you know, I know what the best one is, but the one I kind of picked was one that kind of really has always kind of stuck with me and I've always kind of really enjoyed it.
Little Mermaid.
No, it's a John Carpenter film.
Oh, it's got to be They Live.
No, it's actually Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
Oh.
Which wasn't actually scored by John Carpenter.
Holy crapola. It scored by your guy, Alan Howarth? No.
Nope. It was scored by a lady called Shirley Walker.
Shirley Walker?
Yeah, I know. But so it's completely different from any kind of John Carpenter soundtrack. We all know what they're like. The kind of, you know, the heavy synth there. The overwhelming awesomeness of all of them. But they're very kind of like the themes are quite minimalist, I would say. You know,
aren't they?
They tend to be not simple, but quite, you know, kind of straight. Like the films are kind of straightforward and get the job done and are awesome. Whereas Memoir of Invisible Man, it's like a full on kind of orchestral, more kind of Hollywoody kind of soundtrack. And the film isn't great. I mean, you know, Chevy Chase is full. I think he's supposed to do comedy. He turned up and he said, "I'm going to act," and just kind of completely ruined the tone of the film.
What are you talking about, man? I'm a serious actor.
Exactly. Yeah. Sorry. But the score, the kind of the main theme of the film, kind of goes through it, and it's brilliant. It's such a good sound. It's such a good kind of theme to the film that I think I saw it at the cinema, and it's always just kind of stuck with me. Whenever I see the film, I always kind of go, "Oh yeah, that music's really good." So that one that really kind of, you know, clicked with me, and
it's not familiar to me, I have to say. I know I've seen the film and that, but it's not one that you know, that stands out for me.
Well, you can listen to it right now, Jared.
Okay.
Wasn't that amazing?
It's all right.
But that is, you know, that probably stands as one of my, you know, my secret favourite film score. That would kind of make sense. Mm. But, you know, should I tell you what the actual best movie soundtrack is?
Yeah.
It's Back to the Future.
Yeah, I was tempted by that.
That is actually
one
the best.
I did think about. It was one I didn't think about.
You know what makes me laugh, though? I'd like to just rewind back a couple of months. And if you're not following Evil Ninja Phil, you really should on Twitter.
Yeah, you should.
You did actually mention that The Avengers was, I quote, Alan Silvestri's best work, and now you come out saying...
Best work for ages, I believe I said. I don't think I said it was his best work. I'm going to find that goddamn tweet. You just wait.
You'll find it.
I will find it. The main Avengers score is really good, but I think Alan Silvestri seems to kind of, you know, he hasn't done anything that good for some time. Probably since Predator 2. Did he even score that? I don't know.
Well, do you want to know a little bit of trivia about Alan Silvestri?
Do I? Go on.
Yeah? Yeah. What did you know? He was actually down to score the original Pirates of the Caribbean film.
It kind of makes sense.
He did it, but Jerry Bruckheimer listened to it and thought it was shit. So he tried to get Hans Zimmer on board. Hans Zimmer had his hands tied doing other stuff, so he got his underling kind of thing in his music house to do it, who was Klaus Badeit. And I think it was Hans Zimmer who actually made
the main theme
that obviously was uncredited, so it's Klaus Badeit. I think it's actually Hans Zimmer who do all the themes of that, because I was going to say some of the themes in Pirates of the Caribbean is just tremendous.
Hans Zimmer, he's just a genius, he is.
He is.
This is what has me extremely hopeful about Man of Steel. If there's one dude at the moment who, you know...
His run of form has been brilliant. I mean, you know, The Dark Knight, Inception... The Going for Gold soundtrack.
Yeah, Dark Knight sort of theme he's had going on from Batman Begins and whatever is pretty good. So, you know, I hope it's a sort of a John Williams-esque sort of sound to it. You know, I don't, you know, I know his stuff tends to be very sort of, I don't know, slow.
Yeah,
you know, it's like he doesn't really do a lot of overly fast stuff. Even as fast as sort of, you know, tempo stuff in the Batman movies is still just sort of pacey. It's not, you know, it's not like really sort of kind of stuff. So I'm kind of hoping he sort of, you know, maybe puts it up a slight notch.
Have you never listened to Going for Gold? That's a pacey soundtrack, that is.
Well, recently.
Oh, Gladiator as well. He did those kind of things.
Yeah, but Gladiator again. It's a sort of a slow kind of.
Yeah.
You know what is funny? One of his themes that he's done for the Pirates of the Caribbean soundtrack, the theme called the Kraken. It's pretty much Triple H's theme tune.
Nice.
To it.
Back to the Future as the best soundtrack ever.
Yeah, it is.
It's good. It's very, very good. I think there's no winner. I don't think there could be a winner.
Well, yeah, there is. It's Back to the Future.
No, it can be a winner, no.
But it's back to the winner is Back to the Future.
Well. Anyway, more John Carpenter. Escape from New York. Ooh, that's a theme.
That's a theme tune.
Yeah.
That's a theme tune. That's a theme tune. Even when they jazzed it up for Escape from LA, they couldn't rack it.
Yeah. That was actually co-scored by the lady from Memoirs of an Invisible Man as well.
Oh, right. Okay.
So but that's her fault.
Because you were talking about his stuff and about his stuff's very low-key and things like that. Is that because he actually isn't a musician and he has very, very little in the way of musician skills?
You know, he's not like a professional musician, is he? Didn't he just do it because it was cheaper?
Yeah, like did he just get a keyboard and go right, you know, you know, that kind of stuff on it? Like is that not why Halloween is essentially the same note?
I think so.
Just tapped over and over again.
Just grab the synthesizer and boss, job done.
Yeah, you know, so
working that kind of budget.
But I mean, if for someone who maybe isn't a musician or whatever, I don't know if he is. Maybe he does have music skills.
But he was in a band, as you remember from Big Trouble in Little China.
He did a song from Big. Oh my God!
Big Trouble in so Little China. Best song ever.
Yeah, you know, he pumped out some good stuff like They Live, Escape from New York. All, you know, that's all. And The Thing, man, that's all quality shit. And then again, Alan Howarth. Who kind of it was his cool music guy and a lot of that stuff. You know, he may have had a big input in it, but
either way, you know, it's brilliant.
That 1 hour sort of mix that you can still get, I think, somewhere on by your guy is just a great 1 hour of listening.
Yeah.
So it is.
Although, actually, thinking about it, the best soundtrack is actually Transformers the movie.
What?
Transformers, you know, that's the one good stuff about Transformers is that is the score. It is pretty good. Like the music whenever all the rest of the Autobots are coming down, it's pretty epic and pretty sort of thing. Yeah, it's
who did that?
Michael Giacchino.
Oh, really?
He's great and
yeah. Wait, are you as well?
Pretty all right, you know.
But when I said Transformers, I meant the 80s Transformers.
Oh man, the 80s Transformers movie? That is a soundtrack. Holy shit, Stan Bush. Better
believe you can survive. Lyrically and musically, that is the greatest song ever made.
Do you know what? Do you know, see, a couple of examples. Man, you know, you're at home, you've got a hot date. You know, you don't know what to do. You're like, man, how's this gonna go? You whip on that 1980s Transformers movie soundtrack, and you'll be like, oh yeah,
you're pumping, you're ready.
She's gonna get it, bird.
And you say to yourself, Autobots, roll out,
roll out.
Oh man, why didn't I ever do that? Oh my God, that's so cool. I'm just about to go out, and you just look at yourself in the mirror. Autobots, roll out. That's awesome shit. Sitting in a taxi and you're like, pew, pew. Nah, 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 nah. Taxi man looking at you like you're all weird and shit. And you're like, I don't care. I'm fucking Optimus Prime.
Winston Cola, motherfucker.
She gonna get it bad.
Oh, wow.
That's what that's like. That's soundtrack.
That's what that's like. All,
one shall stand, one shall fall.
But I quite like this. People kind of cutting like soundtracks together and kind of big, massive, long audio mixes.
Mm.
Like you say about the John Carpenter one, but there's those awesome ones of all the 80s action movie soundtracks. The Blood Brothers ones. Yeah, that was brilliant.
Yeah. It's 80s movie sound. Montage music, man. Montage music. Oh, montage music is all awesome sauce. Oh, it's just like, yes. Those Blood Brothers stuff, the first one particularly, the first one is just
awesome. And I love it because it's all pumping you up and then it kind of slows down a little bit and then it's got the speech from Rocky.
No more training. Stop.
Let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Now, if you know what you're worth, now go out and get what you're worth. But you got to be willing to take the hits and not pointing fingers saying you ain't where you want to be because of him or her or anybody. Cowards do that, and that ain't you. You're better than that.
Doing push-ups.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, montage stuff.
So montage music is the greatest soundtrack now.
Montage music is the greatest.
It really is.
And I didn't enjoy the theme to the new Spider-Man film.
No.
Because, was it James Horner did the soundtrack for that? Or, no, was that Prometheus?
James Horner did Prometheus.
Yeah, that sounded too much like Star Trek. He wasn't a good fit for that film. Which, you know,
I think it was all right, but
I don't know. I wasn't sold.
Because I agree with what Jared said earlier on, which was it's very much a discovery kind of soundtrack rather than a scary kind of thing.
I wanted the kind of Hans Zimmer Inception horn.
Well, I mean, I want Hans Zimmer to do something good. I think I've heard that he has done a good bit of it and that it's supposedly good.
But I bet at one point Superman will land and it'll go like that when he lands. He'll slow down the old Fleischer Brothers Superman soundtrack and use that as the base for one of his musics.
Well, that's the funny thing, because I actually read a webpage which compared like all the Superman theme tunes, and they were actually like saying how all of them kind of bleed into the one, because obviously they all have that same Superman kind of
bouncy thing. Exactly. The dur-diddle-a-dur thing.
The syllable kind of going on in the actual theme. Da-da-da kind of thing, right from the Fleischer cartoons. And apparently that's what John Williams based it on for his themes.
Do you know the Superman animated series theme is really good?
You know what the best soundtrack is? 80s cartoon music soundtracks.
Go for it.
They're the best ones. Centurions. There you go.
Defenders. Master of magic. That's the only bit I know. Enemies crumble in fear and confusion.
Mandrake.
Defenders. No, do you know what? There's a lot of good music out there, man. There's a lot of rubbish stuff. Can you think of any bad ones? Twilight.
Yeah.
There must be some bad ones out. I can't really think of
just anything that's just clearly some dude on a synthesizer.
Mostly Transformers soundtracks are bad.
All synthesizer stuff. I mean, it's just one guy on a synthesizer doing all instruments.
Yeah. You know what's got a bad soundtrack?
What?
Princess Diaries.
Yeah. Do you know what's actually a very...
Not the Princess Diaries. Why did I say the Princess Diaries? I meant Princess and the Bride.
I was going to say the Princess Bride. That's what I was going to say. When you said princess, that's what I meant. It sounds really cheap, doesn't it?
It's really cheap. They could do a stripping it off and just kind of put like a proper orchestral score into it.
It sounds very sort of, like it was just done on the cheapo.
Yeah. Those kind of soundtracks, they're very clearly synthesized. Those are the ones that kind of grate in your teeth, like the one for Ghostbusters 2.
And like chick flick stuff. All those like chick flick movies all have that same sort of crappy soundtrack. Yeah.
Where do we stand on Quentin Tarantino then? Because he doesn't actually make a score for his films. He just kind of uses music from elsewhere.
Well, then I don't...
He does use the music good, though. He uses the music well.
He does use that music.
He do good. He do good, that man.
He do good.
I probably wouldn't really count it there.
Yeah, make a good soundtrack. Like Jar Jar Binks.
Well, like that Kill Bill. He killed Bill very well.
Kill Bill very well.
Well, no, that was that not written...
No, none of it was.
Was none of that RZA stuff actually?
Oh, the
battle of whatever you call it, and the.
But that was done by a Japanese guy. Album.
This one, the do do do.
Yeah.
I thought that was for the soundtrack.
That's stock music. That is.
Yeah, that came from some Japanese fella. I've got his CD. I can't remember what his name is.
I'm just looking now.
So, whilst you're looking at that, I'll just mention two other soundtracks that are excellent. One being Scott Pilgrim. You know which director uses music better than him as well?
Go on then.
Wes Anderson.
Oof. Wes Anderson, yeah, but he uses a lot of Mark. He gets Mark
Brothersbout
to do a lot of his scoring, doesn't he?
That's not too bad though. The Life of Good Stuff, that
the Moon soundtrack. That's a good one.
That is a good one.
Yeah, that is a good one.
That, of course, Tim Mansell.
He did Rugrats, so
yeah, true.
Everything's good.
So cool. Okay, well, do you know what? I think we'll call an end to section number 4. Let's move on to section 5. Okay, 5.
Yeah.
Five is the rapid question round type thing.
Wait, was this a quiz show?
A round. Well, it's not a quiz, but basically what I'm going to do is I'm going to rattle off about 10 questions, right?
Yeah, yeah. Just,
you have to say, remember the thing in Friends, Phoebe did it, you have to say the first thing that comes into your mind, the first answer.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I will give you something and you have to pick between the two, and others are just, you need to say something, right? You've only got a couple of seconds.
Some could be aimed at me and some aimed at Martin, so we don't talk over each other.
Well, I was going to say what we'd do is we'd do the first question. I'll just say who it is, but it'll be Phil first, then Martin first, then Phil. We'll just alternate it each question.
Got you. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So I'll say Phil, Martin.
Hang on. So am I basing, obviously it's word association, I'm basing my word off yours.
No, it's not word association. I will give you a question. You just give me the first answer that comes into your head.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Wait, let me just get my question trousers on.
Fair enough.
There we go.
Are you ready?
Yeah, I got my question trousers on.
Sure. Right, it'll only be quick. It's not that long, but I just thought it'd be interesting. We'll just see where it goes. Okay.
See what happens.
All flat, but who knows?
Let's go.
You ready?
I'm ready. I was born ready.
Okay, so we'll start with... I'll just say the question, then I'll say the person. Right, that's how we do it. Okay, right, you ready?
Yeah. There
you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Who's your favorite actor? Phil. It's too long. It's too long.
I don't know.
Tennant.
Phil. Phil, it's supposed to be quick.
I know. I'm trying to think. I'm looking at words. Hang on.
It's supposed to be quick.
Yeah, but it's a really tough, wide question.
It is.
That's why you have to say the first thing that comes into your head, man. First actor, go.
John McClane.
Oh, my God, he's not an actor. Okay, question 2. Who is better, Stallone or Schwarzenegger? Martin.
Schwarzenegger.
Phil.
Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. Number 3, what's your favorite TV show ever? Phil.
Big Train.
Martin.
This is hard.
I know, actually, I thought it was going to be hard because I know it's between two. Go, Martin.
I'm going to say... Sex and City. No, Star Trek, the original series.
Okay. Number 4, Thundercats or He-Man? Martin.
Thundercats.
Phil.
He-Man.
John Carpenter's best movie? Phil.
The Thing.
Martin.
Big Trouble in Little China.
Okay, number 6. Who should play the next Batman? Martin. Because it's going to happen.
Can you come back to me?
No, Martin.
Can't think of anyone, actually.
My answer's a spoiler.
Phil.
My answer's a spoiler, though.
Go.
I'll bleep it out.
Okay. I don't think that's going to happen, but anyway, Phil.
No. Martin. Yeah.
It should do, because he'd be amazing.
I'm just going to say a bollocks answer, and I'm going to say Tobey Maguire.
Okay. Whiskey or vodka? Phil.
Budweiser.
Martin.
Whiskey.
Okay. Worst Star Trek character ever, Martin.
Janeway.
Phil.
Neelix.
Best Star Trek character ever. Phil.
Captain Picard.
Martin.
Kirk.
Ooh. Lionel Richie or the Commodores. Martin.
Lionel Richie.
Phil.
Gotta be the Commodores.
Yeah, that's it. The end.
Wow.
bad start that ended well.
It's lethal watching.
That was a quick fire round. Moving on, number six, go.
When you said the best actor, do you know what face pops into my head? The face of every living actor. All of them.
In one face.
Yeah, just all of them.
You asked me who would make the good next Batman actor. I could just think of Christian Bale because he did Snap. Think of anyone else.
Seriously, look. I just threw that in. There's no way to answer that. Who the hell could do? I don't know. They may as well pick an unknown or something. I don't know.
You make a time travel machine. You get Clint Eastwood from the
1970s. Oh man, that would be so awesome.
You know what? I actually think Clint Eastwood would actually be a better Wolverine.
Oof.
And I also think that Hugh Jackman would be a kick-ass Dirty Harry. Because I think Clint Eastwood are just the same man. Imagine Clint Eastwood as like an old man Logan kind of affair. That would be fucking awesome.
That'd be amazing. Like an Unforgiven star.
Yeah. There you go. So did you like that?
Yeah.
It's hard though, isn't it? Even when I was asking the questions, I had all this time, I was like, I can't answer some of them. I don't know.
You're making us answer them. Come on, Jared.
That's true, yeah.
It's my turn next time. Somebody else can do it if they want.
Yeah, I'll get some questions.
But it's going to be different questions.
Exactly.
So you should tell your answers for this one.
Okay, well, it's not rapid fire, but let's see. Number one... Oh, I've deleted the thing. What was it? okay, I'll answer what I can remember. Oh, here we are. Okay, question one. Who's your favorite actor? Ooh, Kurt Russell. Who is better?
Choice, yeah.
Schwarzenegger. Favorite TV show ever? Quantum Leap. Thundercats or He-Man. John Carpenter's best movie, Escape from New York. Who should play the next Batman? That's the one. I don't know. That's bleeped again, yeah?
Yeah, well, this could be... Yeah, sorry, yeah.
Because I think they should actually do an unknown for the next Batman.
Yes.
I think it would be easier than just...
But I think, yeah, it's got to be unknown, but he's got to actually be able to physically pull it off, unlike George Clooney.
Yeah, no, an unknown, but I don't... So, Mr. Unknown. Whiskey or vodka? Whiskey. Good. Worst Star Trek character ever? Oh, who did I think? The worst Star Trek character ever.
Yeah, all the best guys as well.
Sisko's kid.
Jake, yeah, good call.
Yeah, best Star Trek character ever. Man, I was going to go with Picard. Picard's such a badass. Lionel Richie of the Commodores. Lionel Richie.
Good man.
So, that was my answers.
Yeah, but Commodores includes Lionel Richie, surely.
Yeah, but, man,
it's the
Commodores did not do Dancing on the Ceiling.
And that's a good thing.
That's a bad thing, man. So, anyway, that would have been my answers. But, yeah, there we go. So
chose He-Man as well.
Yeah, of course I chose He-Man.
I have more of a connection to He-Man, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's because I'm slightly younger.
Probably.
And the Thundercats came out.
I think I had more He-Man toys than I had. I think I had one. But I think I just had Dino. That was it.
Fistor. Oh yeah.
So and he came with like a weird red glove thing.
The Lobster dude.
I don't know. I had
like Lobotron or whatever he was called.
Lobotron. Anyway, yeah, that's the end of. Number topic five. Moving on. Topic six. The end. Woohoo!
That was some good agendering, Jared.
Yeah, I think so. There we go. Somebody else gets to do it next.
Yeah.
Just do it literally in about 5 minutes. Just make something up on off the top of your head.
But Ben's got like 4 pages of A4 paper of like serious organization stuff.
It's going to be an exciting discussion, isn't it? It's because it's well. Let's. Are we gonna spoil it?
Nah.
And say what it's about.
No.
Nah. Just we on similar lines to what we're doing. I think at the moment
we'll get there eventually.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Yeah.
So there we go. So that's the end of another episode of Lethal Watcher number 55. I think. Yeah.
55 episodes.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Were we supposed to do Short Circuit this one?
Oh, we were.
Really the watching. There goes another great plan.
well,
you did see
by the seat of our pants. It's better that way.
Did you see my post about what episode we record on Valentine's Day next year?
Oh yeah,
episode 69.
That's some sexy stuff right there.
That's going to be the sexiest episode ever. That's what we can't miss another episode. Otherwise, that slips away.
Okay. We must do something every time.
You know what? That slightly scares me. Three men talking sexy.
Nothing good
will come of this.
Top 10 sexiest action stars.
It's a long time away.
Got a lot of sex to prepare for that one.
Let's just see what happens.
What, during the podcast? Whatever happens, it just happens.
Well, yeah, whatever happens in the podcast stays in the podcast.
But that was good agenda. Good agenda, Gerard.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
It was an Gerard and
way to really shoehorn that in.
And a Gerard.
Ben.
A Gerard?
No.
Okay, sorry.
Right. Signing off.
if you like it, look at facebook.com/aboteducation or the website at aboteducation.com. And, you know, give some feedback.
Feed it up. Feed it back.
Everybody knows that I made my Al Leong tribute video and that everybody liked it, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
You remember that? Well, we all know, well, if you didn't check on our Facebook page, Al Leong himself saw the video and gave it his seal of approval.
That is awesome.
That is amazing.
Which is probably the greatest moment of my life so far, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And there was also a heartbreaking comment that was made.
Yeah.
Are you guys in LA? And heartbreakingly.
No, we're in the UK.
My God. Do you know what? Because like, if you met Al Leong and you got in with Al Leong, you would meet
meet everybody.
Lupin. Fucking hell, you meet Lupin.
And the dude from Big Trouble in China with the bald head and the mustache.
Yeah, that guy, butcher guy.
Yeah. Oh man, it'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
Anyway,
are you guys in LA? No.
Crazy bitches. And then we find out he was in London like a week before you put up the video or something.
Yeah. Oh man, we got to. Gonna be Al Leong. How amazing would that be?
Comes over to Comic Cons. We just gotta keep an eye out.
Yeah, keep an eye out with Al. Off, friend of the show, Al Leong, official friend of the show.
Yeah,
we love Al.
Good old Al.
He's a hero. Gonna take pollution back to zero.
He is indeed.
It is.
Anyway,
bye, folks.
Bye.
Oh shit, why didn't I say Doctor Who is the best TV series? Damn!
I'm going to cut the show right on that.
Lethal Watching was brought to you by Phil Doyle and Gerard Boyle.
I'm Martin Gilbean.
In association with abadeducation.com.